Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Karen, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the New Year's retreat. Welcome, Karen.
Thanks, Jen.
So pretty amazing retreat, huh?
Yeah, pretty amazing retreat. And I was just sitting here thinking how fortunate we were because we had such gorgeous weather the whole time, too.
I know,
such a plus to be in all that beauty and have this fabulous retreat. And, it was really special.
And then I don't know about where you are, but then to be graced with a lot of rain right after it.
Yes.
Kind of perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's all good. But it was, you know, since we have no control over any of that, it was really fun to be at a retreat and get to go out and walk around in nature and, you know, just kind of get to be outside a lot of the time, too.
Yeah, that is neat, too. You know, two things occur to me as you say that. The balance that's offered to us in a retreat schedule, right, you know, just how there's everything. There's plenty of time to eat lovely meals and take walks and all of that, which I'm sure that you'll get to. But also that, you know, we hear Sherry talk so much about leading up to the retreat when she and Michael talk about the schedule, and she'll often talk about the trees that are in that area. And it's so true. Gosh, I was really enjoying the trees as I took walks on the, you know, in the afternoon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. There's just beautiful, beautiful trees that many of them look like they've been there longer than the city, you know, or the houses were there. It's just probably some old native trees that are just grand old giants now.
Yes, yeah. And I was thinking the very same thing and thinking, gosh, isn't it lovely that, at least as far as we can tell, there's a value placed on them that, you know, you'll see people building their fences around them instead of cutting them down to accommodate their fence.
Yeah. There it seemed like there was a lot of care that went into to the nature. Well, you're in a city, and the nature, it just all looked like it was very well cared for. People really valued that. So I don't want to give anything away about the retreat.
No, exactly. I know. I'm thinking the same thing. There's so much of the actual curriculum of the retreat, didn't it? But that's true.
Yeah.
We don't want to give any of the content away.
No.
Because hopefully it will be offered again in other places.
Yes. And but it was just, you know, for me, there's just nothing like showing up and with Sangha and having all the people that show up and, you know, everyone practicing together on that level and you know, the groups are so much fun and there's there's a lot of laughter, you know, I noticed.
Yes.
There's a lot of laughter because when we all come together as Sangha, and I don't think I'll give too much away by saying we, you know, the spotlight gets shined on ego sometimes, and it's funny, you know, what we all can see, and the shared, you know, the shared experience of what we're all kind of seeing together, and also how a lot of times. You know, how somebody else in group would see something that I hadn't seen. They'd see a different, you know, angle on something or, you know, or they'd share an insight or something and how much fun that was in helping me to take another step and see more deeply.
Exactly so.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just thinking as you were saying that, how often when we're laughing and, you know, including the person who's talking, is just laughing at having revealed the, you know, ridiculousness of egocentricity. And that often we're saying, and it's funny now, but it's not funny when we're in the middle of it. So it just highlights how important it is to come together in that way, especially with the topic was fear. And especially with something like that, that one of the ways it gets us is to take it so seriously. And so to be able to have that much lightness and that much laughter about a topic like that really puts us in a much different position of, instead of it sort of driving us, we get to turn around and, as you said, put the spotlight on it. That's such a big part of being on retreat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really fun, and I don't think I'll give anything away by saying, looking at fear, I really got to see that, you know, fear is different than what I thought it was, and it was very fun, very illuminating, and it was just great, and it was transformative.
Yeah.
The work that we did there, I feel, and I project it was for a lot of people.
Oh, I know it was for me.
That
there's such a sense, isn't there, of coming out of the retreat being different, you know, just being a completely different person than you go into the retreat. And we often say it, but what you're saying really reminds me of it, that there are so many practice opportunities now, but not the same as being together in that intensive way for that number of days.
Oh, yeah. I think the retreats are vital. For me, they are.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, you know, the connection, the teachings, just everything that's there is... It's just vital. It's vivid in a way that it's hard to have it be that vivid when I don't attend a retreat. You know, and normally I will, I'm already looking at the schedule to see what is the next retreat I'm gonna get signed up for, because I notice, for me anyway, that the heart is always the one signing up for the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe when I first arrive on the retreat, the ego is going, uh-oh, what did I do? But the heart...
What did you do to me?
Yeah. But the heart, is always the one that signs up and participates and wants to be there and is willing to... do the work and out conditioning any chance we get
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then something that's so lovely about a retreat like this format is, and there are a number of retreats like this I think through the year, Sherry and Ashwini go to North Carolina, they go to Pennsylvania, and I think they have a similar format where not only is there the curriculum and the workshops, but then there's the yoga. And as you say, the time to be. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The yoga was just phenomenal. And, and a lot of times we would do the yoga and then then we'd have meditation. And it's just, I don't know how, yoga really seems to enhance that meditation.
Yeah.
And there's, there's energy too in the body and it just feels so good to move the body and care for the body in that way.
People will often say on a retreat, gosh, the food is so good. And at least in my experience, this retreat, it really was quite delicious and it always is good. But I think there's an element also of, because we're there for it. And I think that, for me, is one of the things that's so amazing about yoga on retreat. So I'm someone who has my own daily yoga practice, but it's not the same. It, just like we were talking about with being on retreat, in group discussions and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
I get on retreat and I do yoga. It's a whole different depth being there in person, being led through the experience. It's like, wow, oh my gosh, there's this whole other level of paying attention that's possible. On every level. So, with the eating, with the yoga, with the groups, with the, plenty of time for rest, with the nature. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And it's like you say, I think we're just, everything builds, and we are mm-hmm. in awareness while we're there. So there's just awareness with everything, with the food, you know, with the group.
Yeah.
And then and it's wonderful to be there with the guide, you know, and I mean that's one of the best parts for me is
exactly,
you know,
me
just
too.
So appreciative of that and just everything.
Well, and I think it's worth underlining what I think you're implying, which is that to get to have an individual guidance appointment with the guide is really, wow, that's an amazing, especially for me. Again, that's a format of other retreats, but somehow coming into the new year with that, with the ability to get guidance like that is very, very powerful.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Well, it's, to me, I'm getting to sit with somebody that is awake and can see things that and show me things that I may not be able to see, you know, all by myself. They assist me to see. And and it's a priceless opportunity, really, is how I look at it. It's just priceless.
Yeah. You know, I love the thing about you're already starting to look at the calendar, you know, to see next year. And when the calendar came out and I saw we've already got the New Year's retreat on the schedule for next year. And I just thought, oh, gosh, for anyone who hasn't done it or even people who have, what a gift that would be just right now to start planning your year around being able to end one year and begin the next in that level of awareness. What a tremendous gift.
It is. That's a really good point. And for any retreat, really, there's something about, for me, it's the touchstone of because we get to be with the monks and with Sherry and Ashwini and and it's just we just touch into something so rich. Quite amazing.
Yep. Yeah. So good. Well, Karen, we're up against the hour. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we end?
No, I think that's it. It was just thank you. You know, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for that wonderful retreat, and thanks for inviting me today to talk about it.
Oh, thanks for being with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Take good care, Karen. Good night.
Thank you. You too. Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Karen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Good. I agree with everything those two gals said. It was just, you know, we always say, this is the best one yet. But this might have been. It was really, it was quite extraordinary. So many people had just really significant insights that Karen and Jen mentioned, you know, you just leaving a different person. Just big breakthrough, insights, giant, huge, oh my goodness, gracious kinds of moments. So it was very, very, very fun. And we had somebody with us who hadn't been with us on retreat before, who said in a guide's appointment after, you know, day three or something like that, said, you know, this is really a remarkable group of people. And, of course, I smiled and proudly and said, yes, I know. And the comment was, they are so present and respectful and kind. Thought,
yes.
That's true. That's our Sangha. Yeah.
Yes.
So I know a lot of times people are afraid to go on retreat. You know, the voices are, oh, it's going to be, and it's too scary and can't do that. But if anybody hasn't been, this would be the group to do it with because it really is true. It's just an extraordinarily kind, present, welcoming, respectful group of people.
Yes, yes. And as I've heard you talk about, we see the best of everybody. And it's just such a blessing.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
Yep. Mm-hmm. 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 It really is. I've mentioned on Open Air that I found a mat, you know, a doormat that says, check your ego at the door. And I put it in front of my door. We don't have that on the retreat, but it's as if we do. That seems to be what everybody does. It it's a time out from egocentricity, you know? And as was mentioned, rather than egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, being able to turn the spotlight on us when we're not expecting it, we keep the spotlight on it and really reveal it for what it is and what it does to people. And there's just such a growing sense of there isn't anything wrong and we can do this and there's no reason not to be joyful in life as we do it. It's excellent. And it's true. We're going to do this retreat. It'll be not exactly this retreat, but very similar. In North Carolina and in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So if anybody wants to take on fear this year and hasn't done this retreat, join us.
Yes, and I loved Jen's comment about not taking fear seriously because that's the whole point of fear, is to take it seriously.
Yes.
And when
yes.
she said that, I just relaxed. It's like, that's right. That's right. That's the secret.
Yeah, it says, fear says it's a big, scary deal. But when we break it down and see it for what it is, we realize, no, it's not. It has way more in common with the Wizard of Oz than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Well,
I have some announcements here for our first show of the new year.
Good. Okay. I have one, too, when you finish.
Okay, do you want to start?
No.
Okay, good. So start off the new year at our video workshop with Sherry on Saturday, January 21st. It's called Welcoming 2017 Joyfully. And as we often say, joy is what's there when you stop doing everything else. So join Sangha in the practice of projecting joy. The workshop is free, but registration is required.
Yes. Yes, indeed. What else?
Yes.
What time is it? It's like 10 to 1 or something Pacific?
Yes, 10 to 1 Pacific is my recollection of it.
Okay.
Okay. In 2016, we practiced emptying the teacup and losing interest in the conversation in conditioned mind. In 2017, our year-long retreat will focus on choosing the unconditional unconditionally and from a state of presence, projecting joy. The retreat will feature daily assignments and a radio show to process what you are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I should mention that radio show is daily also, not only daily assignments, but daily radio show.
Monday through Friday.
Yes, yes, fabulous.
I think they're assignments 7 days a week, and then we talk about them 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. What a way to start the day, or as people have noted who were with us through the Seeing Through the Eyes of Love, you can have lunch with us.
Yeah, or perhaps dinner if you're in Europe.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, we want to include everybody here.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And we cannot feel blessed if we are attending to conditioned mind. Only when we move into the moment is blessed our experience. And for an exploration of directing the attention to joyful appreciation of all that is, join Sherry's email class, Oh Happy Blessed, starting January 27th.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's pronounced blessed or blessed in the title there. But
it's kind of, it's like project and project, right? So we have project right. joy, we project joy, we have blessed, we're blessed. Yeah,
yes.
Good. Goes in every direction.
Goes in every direction, good. And so for these and other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. And 5 minutes, please, on one topic is great.
Mm-hmm. So my one little announcement before you welcome the next person is that we are getting excitingly close to having all of our water tanks at the monastery filled with water. As a matter of fact, it is raining so hard now that we're not being able to put the last one in place quite yet. But we'll put the last giant tank in place within days, and then that one will be filled too, and we are pretty much set.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, that is amazing. Yeah, you'll have...
We have our next project, which Penny is our gardening person, and she's the one who got us really started on this project of capturing the water and that sort of thing, and she does the permaculture and all of that, and so we had a very brief conversation about setting it up so that we will put in a natural water purifying system at the monastery. So the water will be sent through a series of plants that will cleanse the water and that sort of thing. I'm excited about that one. So more about that soon. Yep.
That's great.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
I saw one of those. Omega Center actually has one of them, and I saw it several years ago. So, that was... one of the inspirations. Otherwise, I would say, "Ooh, that sounds really." But the way they had it laid out, I mean, it's not. I mean, you don't want to do one on your patio, probably, but it's definitely a manageable, possible thing to do, especially people in circumstances like ours. So we're excited about it.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I can hear the raindrops here right now.
Right. Doesn't it make you want to put a big old giant container out there and capture it? Yeah.
Collector.
Heavens,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great. Good. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Okay. Let's get to our first caller here. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, gracious,
yes,
no.
That's
yeah, but there's something terribly, terribly wrong.
I'm doing it on my phone. Hold on. Is it any better? I have a headset stuck in the phone.
Are you?
Can you not hear me?
Keep trying.
Well, I don't know. This is my first time calling. I don't know how to do it other than... It's on the phone, and I have a headset in the phone with earplugs in my ear.
Oh, okay.
Not the same as
I can hear you. If you kind of here's my secret when I have when I'm on earbuds. If you just hold the microphone,
hold
it away from the rest of the earbuds and away from your body and all of that. Sometimes it creates less background noise.
Okay. My name is Elaine, and I do have laryngitis, so I really didn't think, I've heard the podcast for years, and some people say they try for months to get on. So I have been to the Nothing's Wrong With You retreat several years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I don't practice solidly, but, you know, I dabble. I did some awareness, had an awareness coach when I got back for something coming up specifically that I wanted to have an awareness coach to help me with. Mm-hmm. And this past year I did an email class, and then recently I did a stop, drop, and text, but things aren't working.
Now here you are.
What? Oh, now here I am.
And now here you are. This is very good.
I feel like I hear everyone else, it seems like they almost like, you know, like religion or something. They belong. They it's really working for them, and they're pleased to talk with you about it and all. And I feel a bit negative because I feel I'm still stuck in, you know, that loop of negativity. Not all the time, but with the things that I have problems with.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I'm not recording and listening. I tried that for just a little bit, but it seems stupid to me. It doesn't seem to, I don't see how it can do anything to, I don't know, it just seems strange to walk around your whole life with a recorder, you know, next to your head to get you not to think about.
Let me ask you this. Does it seem more stupid and strange to walk around in a giant lake of self-hate?
I guess so. Yeah.
Well, when you put it that way. Yeah. So I was telling people on a call earlier today that one of the things that I want to have Sangha focus on, I'm going to enlist Ashwini to help make this happen, because there's this thing that happens to people that people are not aware of, don't see it as a thing, as a process, and that is listening to a voice in the head that tells them how they feel about something, what their opinion is about something when they have had no experience.
Okay.
Which is what just happened to you, right? So you hear all of these people say, I mean, if you've been listening to Open Air, you might have heard the fellow talk about having been profoundly depressed, clinically depressed, suicidally depressed. And since doing recording and listening, he's no longer depressed.
Okay.
Now, when you hear somebody say something like that, and then you hear a voice saying, well, yeah, but it's stupid to just walk, you might, it could trigger a person to say, now there might actually be something about that that I don't know. I might be listening to a voice express an opinion that is not designed to help me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the voices that I hear definitely are not helping.
And, that's right.
You know,
and yet we can get bamboozled into believing them and doing what they say.
Yes.
Another
aspect about this practice is I keep thinking about possibly joining a meditation group again or something here where I live, where you're allowed to meet people. I know about the privileged environment. I think that's great for practice. But at the same time, I don't have a lot of contact with people. I work at home. And I think that would help take me out of myself to make some friends with like interests and stuff like that. So,
well, you're certainly welcome to do anything that you would like to do. Now, we have an entire sangha based in the privileged environment for this very simple reason. I've been doing this for many decades now, And the number of people that I have met who have practiced with groups who socialize together and who have left it because one very famous center, in fact, actually had lawsuits that the Sangha brought against different people in the Sangha, okay? And huge blow-ups over dating and sleeping with one another and this sort of thing. So I'm not a fan of that. But I'm also not a fan of telling people what they need to do and what they don't need to do. Because here's the thing. I don't care. And, you know, that's a very relaxing way to be in life. So all I can do is suggest. Now, I will tell people, Karen and Jen and Michael, too, all of us were saying, it's really important to go on retreat. So at this last retreat, I asked people for a show of hands for anybody who feels, who hears voices that say they don't belong. And every single person in the room raised their hand. It is the most
common. That seems so strange to me because in my real life, I don't seem to. It seems other people, they look very connected, you know, their church or their clubs or different things. And so I guess people are more honest on a spiritual retreat about what they really feel.
Well, people might be doing anything, but that doesn't have anything to do with what the voices in their head tell them. So a person could go to church week after week after week after week and still be listening to a voice that says, but you don't really belong here. People don't really care about you. Okay?
Yeah.
So I'm saying I think it's really important for anybody who has a serious spiritual practice who would like to awaken and end suffering to be on retreat. I think recording and listening is the most powerful single tool for transformation that has ever come into existence. It is my experience that socializing with people we practice with is a big mistake. Now, that's one person's perspective, and everybody's free to do whatever they want to do.
Okay. And so what does it mean again when you say there's nothing wrong with you? And you said recently.
Say that again. I really am having a hard time hearing you. So repeat that one.
Okay. I said, what does it mean again when you say there's nothing wrong with you and nothing needs to be fixed?
Well,
did you hear me?
What that means is there's nothing wrong with you and nothing needs to be fixed.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
That's what it means. That's what it means. So I was quoting, I don't know who, at this retreat, the chap who was asked, if we're already enlightened, why do we need to practice? And the response was, because you don't know it.
You don't know that you're enlightened?
So, that's right. And so we need to practice in order to have an experience of our inherent enlightenment. Okay? So the same thing with there's not, our whole practice is based in going through the steps that are necessary for folks, it seems. They're not necessary, but it seems to be what is necessary for us to realize there is nothing wrong. So if there's nothing wrong, then there can't be anything wrong with you either, or me, or anybody, or anything else. But that's the whole point of an awareness practice, is to have a direct experience of that, to realize that for oneself. Once we realize that, then we're free.
So when you say there's nothing wrong, even huge things like the Holocaust that happened, or...
There's nothing wrong. There are things that we don't approve of. There are things we don't like. There are things that we wish were different. There are things that we decide in our own lives we want to stop doing or not support. But that's not the same as they're wrong.
Uh-huh. So If you don't approve of them, you get motivated.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing, and then we must go, okay? Here's the thing. This is a practice. And it, so it's something that we do in order to position ourselves to have the insights that will give us the direct experience that we're seeking. Because none of this can we understand intellectually.
Right, right. Okay, well, thank you for talking with me.
You are very welcome. I hope your voice comes back from wherever it's vacationing, and perhaps we'll see you on retreat before long.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Yesha. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Elaine. That was a fascinating conversation, Sherry. I love that on every level.
Oh, good. Good.
Good, yeah. And yeah. We have another call here.
All right, excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Andrew. Hey, Michael. Hey, Sherry.
Hey, Andrew. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Hope you guys are.
We are. What's going on?
Well, a friend of mine suggested that I share a recording and listening tool that's really helped me, and I thought I'd call in and just say how much it's helped me.
Good.
This is the same person who encouraged me to start recording and listening, and I do it a lot at work. I've found it's a really good place to just put something on loop and really, really helps. And then a while ago, I don't know why exactly it was, but I think I was feeling an extra dose of self-hate and getting identified with my ego that I wanted to step things up a little bit. And I had headphones on listening to this recording, basically saying, I love you and you're doing great and things like that, and made a video on my phone of that. Because I really like using my smartphone for practice, and then I could watch that over and over. And my daughter, my youngest daughter, she noted I had a link on my home screen, and she hit it one time by accident, and she got really into it, and started kissing the screen every time that it would play. It would loop and loop, and she would kiss the screen. I thought that's a good way for her to get a little bit of the same benefit. Vicariously.
Yeah. How old is she, Andrew?
She's 2.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And why not start right now, right?
Right. And in general, mm-hmm. they're very good about reflecting back anything that's in my life, you know, gentleness, kindness, love, those get reflected back, anger, et cetera, everything gets reflected back from the kids. So that's very helpful,
yes.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. That's great. And that you do it at work. So I often encourage people, you know, if you depending on the kind of work you do, there's always room for one earbud, right? Mm-hmm. It can just be in the background, just kind of like background music, only it's that soothing return to center encouragement that everything is all right, you're okay, you're loved, right here with you, everything is fine. It's very good. Yeah.
I remember when I heard the one earbud idea was when I really didn't think much of recording a list. I thought I'm too busy. I won't be able to really give any attention to it. Or it turns out it works no matter how much attention. Like just by doing it,
right? Like. And then we hit that place where we really like it, right? We really enjoy it. And so the previous caller. You know, the idea that it's silly to walk around with, you know, listening to this. But everybody that I've ever known, whether they admit it or not, would love to have a best friend of whatever, whoever is in that place, who's just right there with you all the time, always ready to talk about whatever you want to talk about, ready to listen to you, encourage you, support you. I mean, who doesn't want that? Come on. And there you have it, the perfect companion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Much better than what defaults through my brain.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. Rather than what conditioned mind would offer us. Yeah, that just boatload of negativity that never ends. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to catch on. You know, the thing that heartens me is the level of resistance there is. And so for anybody who has an awareness practice at all, just recognizing that level of resistance kind of sparks a, well, there must be something to this. And that's the moment the person becomes open to trying it. And once a person becomes open to trying it, then it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I've definitely I've noticed a lot of identifying with the ego the last however many days, and it puts me in this place of it's all uphill from here. You know, I feel like I'll try anything.
Right. Anything to get back to center. Whatever it is, I'll do it. I'll try it. Yeah. And then, of course, the work is to stick with it, right, which is just something we all know with practice. We just have to, you know, as Jen and Karen were laying out, you know, we just have to line it up. What's next? What's next? What's next? Because if we don't, then we start drifting off and wandering out there, and pretty soon we're caught and trapped, and it's God knows how long before we come to again, and why waste the time? You know, we don't know how long we have. We want to be here for every second of it.
Yeah, I had a lot of story running as we were talking about retreat, because that's definitely something that I've wanted to do for a long time, and there was a lot of I can't because of the kids or the time or the money, but it's good to remember that idea of trying anything that'll work, and also the commitment of putting it, getting started with the process and following through, that's all involved, and much more important than that story of how it can't happen.
Yes. And for people who have kids, it's a great thing to model for children. Because no matter what the voices tell us, kids are going to grow up to be who we are. That has nothing to do with what we tell them. I don't know how many kids you have. I know the two-year-old, but it doesn't take us long to figure out they're not paying a bit of attention to what we say to them, and they're going to grow up to be who we are. So I see parents sacrificing themselves. You know, oh, I can't leave the kids because blah 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 blah. Well, they're going to raise kids who can't leave the kids because of blah blah blah. So if we want people who grow up to prioritize awareness and presence and consciousness and that sort of thing, then that's the kind of parents we have to be. So it's wonderful modeling. I've had, people come on retreat and leave 10-month-old babies at home. And, of course, they're just biting their fingernails and, but they do it because they realize how important their practice is for their family, especially for their children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Time Out for Parents book changed my life, and someone suggested, you know, around the same time that I was reading that, taking breaks every 2 hours that I was with the kids, and it's gotten where they know it. A little alarm goes off, and my 2-year-old says, "Daddy, break," and runs and gives me a hug and a kiss, and she knows Dad's out the door when that alarm goes off. Based on all these same principles of how. And it's really good for them, you know,
it's wonderful for them. Yeah. Nobody needs a human sacrifice. You know, nobody. It just comes with really bad energy. So, yeah. That's great. All right. Well, thank you, Andrew. Is this your first time calling in?
It is.
Oh, well, it's wonderful to have you with us. So don't be a stranger, huh?
All right.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Andrew. That was a very fun conversation, Sherry. I just love that.
Oh, I yeah. You picture that little person kissing that screen? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love it. Great. Sherry, we're going to break here and hear from our Zen Awareness Coaching Program, and then we'll be back.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
The practice theme for this year is Anjali, emptying your teacup. As the Zen story teaches, when we're full of ego's preferences, opinions, likes and dislikes, there is no room for the guidance and clarity of awareness. Through weekly coaching, regular commitments, and the practice of recording and listening, we train to empty our teacup and be open to life. Zen Awareness coaches are trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching about life issues and awareness practice in general. We hear from new folks and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the support they need to deepen their practice. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees, getting a coach assists in supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness coach, go to livingcompassion.org, click on the pink lotus, then programs to find Zen Awareness coaches. Make 2016 the year of emptying your teacup and having the life your heart desires.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Heather from Portland.
Whoa, Heather, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
Great. We're getting a lot of Portland-esque rain.
Well, it's cold here, so yeah.
Uh-huh. What's going on?
So I'm calling. I've been working with my awareness coach on this specific relationship that I have with my roommate, who is also my cousin, and I love her so much. We have so much fun together, and yet I often find myself in a huge story about how we live together, and it's creating a lot of suffering in my life, and it's like I can see the pattern happening, and I can watch it happen, and I can know it's going to happen. And I do everything I know how to do to disrupt the process, and yet I'm still in the middle of this story all the time, and it just makes me feel so bad because I care about
which
her.
Which is, of course, which is the point of the story, right? And so what's the deal?
So the deal is that we moved in together about 6 months ago, and we have this beautiful apartment, and she loves stuff and has a lot of stuff kind of everywhere, bathroom, kitchen, bedroom, living room, and I don't like stuff. So I feel like I'm constantly trying to create space in my home, and her stuff has become really anxiety provoking for me, and almost like I've taken it, I take it personally when she has so much stuff, and I've tried to talk to her about it, just kind of tried to voice, you know, I understand that she loves her stuff, but I love space. And there's just a disconnect between her being unable to understand kind of where I'm coming from. So I'm constantly feeling like I'm...
Hey, let me... Yeah, a bad, naggy, crazy person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so do you have your own room?
I do, but that's been a little problematic as well. But I do have my own room.
And how is that problematic? You can have that any way you want it.
I can, but we flipped a coin, and she has this big, beautiful room with this giant closet, and I have this little teeny tiny room right off the kitchen, and she's constantly using her stuff in the kitchen at all hours of the day. I just feel uncomfortable in my house, and I resent her because of it, and yet...
Okay. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Is moving to a different place for both of you an option?
For both of us together?
Yeah.
I don't think she wants to.
Okay.
We've talked about it, and we've talked about me moving out. But my hope is that I can, because I've really been looking at this with my coach, and my hope is that I can, I want to, like, break through how, like, much meaning I'm making about this and just, like,
okay.
Get over it.
So let me ask you the most unzen question ever.
Okay.
Why? Why?
Because I feel like if I'm able to do that, I will have, like, overcome conditioning.
Yeah, and how's that working for you? So my point, Heather, is this, okay? Ego loves to make contests. My favorite example, you're an alcoholic. Conditioning says if you were the right person, you could be a bartender. Why? What's the point? Life is too short for those kinds of contests. That's my encouragement. So it's not like if you weren't in this situation, you wouldn't have life circumstances to work with, is it?
No, God, no.
No, God, no. Right. You'd still have relationships and work and the usual money and health and everything human beings have going on, right? So you'd have plenty of places to practice. But what conditioning would do is back you into this kind of a corner and say, this is it. So I rarely give advice, so don't think of this as advice. Think of it as a possibility or something to consider, okay? Say to your cousin, look, this really is not working for me. Now, I'm happy for you to have the kitchen, the living room, the bathroom, the whole thing. But I need a space that I can have be the way I want it to be. So are you open to switching bedrooms? If she says yes, problem solved. You just go in, you close the door, and you have your space, right? And when you come out of there, you know the living room is going to be her stuff, and the kitchen is going to be, and the bathroom is going to be her stuff. But in your room, you can have space. If she says no, well then.
Yeah.
Can you see it?
Can I ask? I totally can, but can I ask? I have just one question about something that you said.
Yeah.
So when you asked me, you know, if it wasn't this content, would I still have other stuff? And I laughed because I know, of course I would, and I do. I mean, this is not the only thing I'm working on. It just feels the most kind of prevalent in my life on a day-to-day basis. But because I'm so aware of that, that's why I just want to be able to, like, work through it.
Well, yes, we do, Heather. And it's a noble ambition. And if you want to do that, that is absolutely great. And I would support you 100,000% in doing that. All I'm suggesting is it's not necessary for us to take on the most difficult stuff So, you know, where you live, where you work, that's a really big part of a person's life. So if you're working someplace and it is absolutely intolerable, that might not be the place to practice letting go egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. If you're in a relationship that is 24/7 difficult to the point of abusive, that might not be the place to practice right now. Having your home be a place where you can never relax or feel comfortable might be a bigger spiritual opportunity than you need to take on right now.
I see.
I don't know any aspect of awareness practice that says you need to be in a contest. So make the choices that make your life work. You know, the voices are on about, let's say, I don't know where you work, so maybe you love your job, but say you didn't. And they're just on it all the time. I hate this place. This is miserable. God, I'm sick every Monday. I have to go into work. I just hate it. I can't stand to be. Find another job. If third or fourth job down the road, it looks like it's going to be fabulous, and then you're hearing them, now we know that's the place. That's really the place to focus, right? But if you're going to focus on that, don't make your living situation a war zone and your finances a disaster and your intimate relationship abusive. And with me?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't think anything real in life wants that for us. As far as I can tell, everything except ego wants us to be happy.
Yeah.
So prioritize it. You know, choose her. Choose Heather. Find her a nice place to live. Let her enjoy it. Now, what's the next thing to take on?
Yeah.
Somebody said to me on retreat, you know, I love luxury. I want luxury. I choose luxury. I said, well, that's great. You know, that's swell. Don't believe that always choosing luxury and be able to make that your life decision is going to make you happy. It's not. Okay? None of this is. We're going to have to face what goes on with us. But let life support you in facing it, not ego make a contest out of it.
Yeah. It does. It feels like I'm in contest with myself because I want it to work. I mean, I desperately want it to work, and yet I've lived alone for so many years, and I can remember back to how important and lovely that was for me. So there's like fighting up against this idea that it almost feels like a failure if I move out or if I want my own
space.
Well,
here's the thing, Heather. Here's the thing. You could live with somebody, but live with somebody who feels about a space the way you do.
Yeah.
So if you're a person who likes quiet, solitude, you know, you're drawn to classical music and candlelight, and you decide you're going to live with somebody who wants hard, whatever it is, whatever rock and roll is called currently, at the top of, you know, and fluorescent lights, and expect yourself to be happy. Why? Why do that? I mean, there could come a time in your life when that's a requirement. But it's not now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we're letting ego give us ideas about how things should be and, you know, you love your cousin, great. Invite her over for dinner. Have a lovely evening. Go to her house and have dinner.
Yeah. Thank you. That sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I can promise you, if you go in this direction, there'll be a ton of other things for you to work on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm quite sure of that, too.
Yeah. And you'll have much more calm, centered strength to bring to them.
Okay.
Now, I never give advice, as you know, so this is just something to consider. It's simply a perspective to consider. God knows I would never say this is something you should do.
Sure, of course. Thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Heather. That was another fabulous conversation, Sherry. So helpful. No contest.
Good. Yeah. It's just ego just, you know, if there are two choices, it's always going to go for the one that will result in the maximum amount of suffering. And then call that the good person thing to do.
Right. Crazy making. Yeah.
It is. It really, truly is. Yeah.
Yes. And we have time for at least one more caller here, Sherry.
Good. Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jeff from South Dakota.
Well, hello, Jeff. Hi. How are you doing?
Well, not too bad, Sherry. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling with needing some guidance. I'm still kind of working on job things, my question is kind of related to karma, in the sense that I look at my difficulty in getting jobs that I like, and see patterns, and I kind of see those that I tend to put myself in conditions that are kind of adverse, so then I have to push through, and I see that kind of as a pattern, and I also
you could relate to what Heather was saying.
I could relate to that pattern, and that whole thing about contest was very helpful. So I can see that, and then I also see this pattern where I tend to work hard to do the right thing, and then things just don't work out. And I can see those out there, but then yet things don't work out. I consciously think, well, this would be a job that I would match my skills, and it would be a reasonable job, and I think I would like it. And I consciously do that, and then I apply, and then I never get them. And
oh, I see. Oh, so it's not like you get them and then they turn out not to be good jobs.
No,
you don't get the job.
I just don't get the jobs, and it's almost. And when I think it feels karmic in the sense that, like in the last 5 years, I've probably applied for 30 different jobs and interviewed for probably 10 of them, and I don't get them. And I've studied how to interview, and the interviews go seemingly pretty well and everything, but it's like almost like a force field or something it didn't work out again.
And so, have you ever asked somebody why?
Well, I have, and they usually they would say like, well, you just didn't seem to be quite the fit for us. They'll say you were really, really well qualified. But, you know, we just thought that you wouldn't be the right person for it. It becomes a...
You can't pin somebody down and say, no, 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 no. Really, tell me. What is it?
I want to say, well, the people that I've had jobs, they love me. I always get high evaluations and stuff. did you call then? But that never, it never happens. So it's like there's something that I'm just not seeing or not getting, or there's some, and so I'm just wanting a little direction in which way to go.
Well, of course, I don't know. But what occurs to me, what drops in as you're talking, is essentially what I asked you. That to become more interested in what is going on than in getting the job. And I know you are interested in what is going on, but I mean really interested in what's going on. More interested because you're just not a fit. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And I don't quite know how to do that other than truly seeing if somebody would tell you honestly what it is, you know, to come back and say, you know, I really want this job. And so I need to know, what is it? What are you seeing? What am I missing? What is it that makes me, you know, it's kind of a, yeah, I mean, it's sort of what we're up against, all of us, all the time, looking at what is going on, what am I doing that's making this not work? And that's it's not that I'm not getting the job. It's what is it that I'm doing, and of course you refer to this as something karmic, what's going on that I'm not having the life experience that I want to have? What is it? So if it were something physical, you know, I encourage people to pay really close attention, watch everything, look for the simplest little, you think that can't possibly be it, but and then an article comes past or somebody mentions something, follow every lead, every possible lead to get a sense of what the heck is this? What's going on? And to take that approach to it, because you're right. It can't be just coincidence. There's a pattern. There's something going on. And so what is it? Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if you get clues from people around you who know you. Are there things that people say about you, about how you are? You know, you're, well, you know, that's because you're kind of, you know, do you know what I'm asking you?
I think so. Like, am I getting feedback from people that I know that would say, like, oh, you're kind of aloof or you're a little...
Yes, precisely.
You know, just...
If somebody didn't know you, they would think you were egocentric. Or sometimes your humor is a little biting. Or... Yes, exactly those kinds of things mm-hmm. that you kind of know about yourself that people tell you, but you've never addressed them as an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's your assignment, Jeff.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And really to kind of, if there are people that you feel comfortable doing this with, who are close to you, who love you, to find out from them. So if I applied for a job with you, what are the qualities and characteristics that I exhibit that would make you suspicious of me or think that I wouldn't be good with that? What is it? And just see if you can get a team of detectives working with you to sort of suss out what is it. What is it that people might be responding to?
Okay. All right.
Then you'll let me know, huh?
Then I'll let you know.
Excellent.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right.
Thank you
thank
very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. And it is exactly 6 o'clock, Sherry. How did you do
that? Is that amazing or what?
Yes.
Thank
and
you, Michael.
What amazing conversations tonight. I just loved it.
They were good, huh? We have good people.
Yes, it was.
What can we say? We have good people.
Yes.
Let's talk to
Thank
more
you,
next
Sherry.
Week. Thank you,
okay.
Michael. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.